Our next week's episode of 88 Problems of Sports Ain't One podcast, brought to you by theohiosportsblog.com. We're discussing Ohio State's big win in their opener against Oregon State in Ryan Day's debut as the interim head coach. We'll also get into a little Browns talk as they open the season this Sunday against the Pittsburgh Steelers at First Energy Stadium, and also the prospects for the Cleveland Indians going down the stretch as they just signed former AL MVP Josh Donaldson to add to an already potent lineup. But first, 88 Problems in Sports Day 1 is brought to you by BuyCaseCrew.com. They make the best sports-related iPhone cases for you. They have your Browns, your Indians, your Cavs. They'll even make an original sports case for you to fit over that iPhone. But when you get that iPhone case, remember to use code OSB for 10% off their already low prices to protect that iPhone. They're great cases. You can drop them, what have you. It will protect your iPhone. But remember, when you're checking out, OSB for 10% off all these awesome cases that are already at a great price. Impressive, but to me it was a very uninspiring victory. Not exactly what I expected, and a little underwhelmed, if I say so myself.
You know, I might have thought the same thing too if I were you too, but you got to look at it this way: the Buckeyes were playing with a lot of emotion coming into this game, so a lot of mental mistakes were going to be made, and you know. They had to get things settled down, and eventually they did get things settled. And if you notice, a lot in the second half was a lot of the younger guys playing more so. So I mean, it wasn't your atypical performance by the Buckeyes, but you know, it's week one, and I'm not worried, especially because Urban Meyer is back at practice now. So these things are going to be corrected.
Yeah, just a little uninspired by the defense. I thought the defense would be way better than it was. They gave up 7 points. The Oregon State Beavers, let's be honest, they stink. They're projected to win 2 games this year. I didn't expect them to score 31 points. They scored 14 in the first half, 17 in the third quarter. And I mean, it was 7-7 at one point during the game. So Oregon State gave them a little more fight than I thought. I thought the defense would be a little more dominating coming into the game than it was.
I mean, yeah, they did at first. But like I said, a lot of it was they're playing with high emotion. So mental lapses are bound to happen with high emotion. And a lot of that, too, was bad tackling. There was a lot of missed tackles out there. A lot of times guys were getting to the break because poor tackling technique. And that's stuff that can be corrected as the season goes on. And knowing Ohio State like it is, it's something that will get corrected as it goes on. I will say the defensive line looked incredible. They looked even better than last year's defensive line. Nick Bosa, I honest to God, I wouldn't be surprised if he challenges for a Heisman Trophy. 2 sacks, 2 fumble recoveries, and a defensive touchdown. He just started his Heisman campaign right there. Draymond Jones had 2 sacks in the game. He had only 1 all of last season, but he was always in the backfield. And that just goes to show you the talent that's around him, that he's able to still bust through there. And then you got guys like Jonathan Cooper, who got the nod as the starter over the young Chase Young. And I think that speaks to how much Ohio State believes in his talent. So I got to say the defensive line doesn't worry me. Secondary, they have some things that they got to work on. But one of those problems was we didn't have Jordan Fuller, who's clearly our leader out in the secondary. My one area concern for the defense right now is the linebackers. Outside of Pete Werner, the linebackers didn't look so good. But I don't think that's a testament to the talent. I honestly think that's a testament to the current position coach. I think they really miss Luke Fickell right now.
Yeah, and I'd tell you who else they missed in that secondary is Kerry Coombs, who took his talents to the NFL. He was the mainstay and the stalwart of that secondary and developed all those guys for all those years in the first-round talents. for the NFL, for the Buckeyes. But switching to the offense, Haskins has great numbers here, 22 of 30, 313, 5 TDs. But, the stats are a little misleading. A couple of those touchdowns were those jet sweeps that they touch pass, and they count them as a pass now instead of a rush. So Haskins had a pretty good game, and I do like the way that they spread it out through all the receivers. I mean, the leading receiver had 6 catches, K.J. Hill, but right behind him was Austin Mack with 5, and then Terry McLaurin and Paris Campbell each had 4. So I do like the way they're spreading it out, and they're not focusing on one main receiver.
I don't think the jet sweep plays should be used as a negative for Dwayne Haskins. I think that's just a whole new wrinkle that they've just added to the offense. And you got to look at it this way. Dwayne Haskins isn't as mobile as JT Barrett, so you got to come up with new ways. And those jet sweeps are, I think that's Ryan Day putting his stamp on the offense. I know a lot of it last year with Kevin Wilson was the, it was the running back flex plays and all that. And the bubble screens. But I think this jet sweep thing is something new and something that nobody really expected to come out of the Buckeye offense. So it's a way to get the speed more involved. And then also Dwayne Haskins, he's the first Ohio State quarterback to go over 300 yards and have 5+ touchdowns in his debut. You can't tell me that's not impressive. The kid has got the skill, clearly has the skill. We already knew he had the arm strength, but I think what he showed a lot in this game is he also has incredible accuracy. Granted, he was playing Oregon State, but still, he showed great touch with the ball, putting the ball into his receiver's hands and not overthrowing him. The one maybe you could say was an overthrow was the one deep pass to Paris Campbell. But if you go back and actually look at that play, that was a very catchable ball that Paris Campbell should have pulled down.
Yeah, Haskins had a nice debut. I guess I'm just cautiously optimistic knowing just how bad Oregon State is. It's not a knock on Haskins, but the 5 TDs, that when you run a jet sweep and you toss it, it counts as a pass, which in my mind, is it a pass? Is it not a pass? It's nice for the offense because if they do drop it, it's an incomplete pass instead of a fumble. But, I mean, that was 2 of his touchdowns. But Haskins did have a nice day, 22 of 30. Is a great completion percentage, and he did spread the ball around nicely. And Mike Weber, 20 carries for 186 yards, averaged 9.3 yards a carry or 3 TDs. I mean, that's getting it done on the ground also.
Oh, my God. We have an absolute stable at running back. I mean, Mike Weber – He's been doing this since last year. He's been breaking those long touchdown runs. But on top of that, he looks slimmer this year and faster, which is dangerous because he's the north and south type of runner. And so he's going to crack some heads and he can break for runs. But then you also got to add in J.K. Dobbins who can make any play a big play. So, you know, your 1A and 1B running backs are 2 of the top guys in the country. And then you throw in freshman Brian Snead and freshman Master Teague, who got to play in garbage time, but they look legitimately like the next running back stars after J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber move on. One of the things that I wanted to go back to, you were saying how you're cautiously optimistic about this team. I think that you shouldn't be cautiously optimistic. I think what this tells you is just how dangerous Ohio State is, and it just gives me more reason to say that this team is going to be a national champion this year. It puts no doubt in my mind. Little things will be corrected as the season goes on, especially once Urban is back in practice. Some of that is probably attributed to his lack of experience as a head coach, but it doesn't by any way it doesn't make the job that he's done so far look that bad. Things will be corrected, and this team is scary good, and they have scary talent. I mean, they're deeper than the 2014 team, and that team won the national championship.
I like your prediction of national champion, but there might be a few other teams around the country that might have, before the end of the season, might have something to say about it. A team down in Tuscaloosa looked awfully good Saturday night. But as far as this game, this team goes, they're going to roll Rutgers because Rutgers stinks also this coming week. But I think the test will be the third week, Ryan Day being the head coach on an away game. Away games are just different altogether, and going down to TCU, which Gary Patterson has been the head coach there for 20 years, gives them a little bit of an advantage there. But I'm not sure that they're as talented as Ohio State, but it'll be a little bit different for them in a couple weeks when they go on the road.
Yeah, and technically it's a neutral site, being that it's at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. But a lot of the times the Texas games have been a home. The games in Texas for Ohio State have been more like home games for them. I mean, because they've produced big victories there. They won the national championship there in 2014. They beat USC in the Cotton Bowl there, you know. And a lot of that you can see in the recruits that they pulled from Texas. I mean, most recently we have Garrett Wilson, the five-star wide receiver out of Lake Travis High School. While I sort of agree that TCU could be a test because they did actually look pretty decent in their debut, and that's a testament to their coaching. I don't think they have nearly the amount of talent that Ohio State has. But you can't discount them just because of who their coach is. Gary Patterson always has that team ready to play. But I still foresee a pretty easy victory in that, especially with the way that I saw Haskins play. It gives me no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that they're going to play well. I think the real test will be later against teams like Penn State, Michigan State, you know, and Wisconsin, you know. Penn State, Michigan State both struggled in their week one debuts, but honestly, with that, they'll correct those too. So I'm not really worried about the TCU game per se, but I'm not going to discount it either because Gary Patterson always has that team ready to roll.
Yeah, and it looks like early on, understandable, it's just week one, but it looks like Ohio State's going to be the flag bearer for Ohio State, or for the Big Ten, as the rest of the Big Ten really struggled. Michigan State struggled to win against Utah State. Michigan went down at Notre Dame. Penn State went to overtime at home against Appalachian State. Except for Ohio State, the big name teams in the Big Ten really struggled opening week. And so it looks like Ohio State's going to be the torchbearer for the Big Ten this year to try to get them a spot in the college football playoff.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people were saying that Wisconsin is currently ranked ahead of Ohio State right now, which I think is ridiculous, and it's even more ridiculous after that week one performance now. But a lot of people were saying that Wisconsin and Ohio State could both be teams that get in there. And honestly, at the end of the day, I still believe it's going to be Ohio State. And like I've said, I'm going to keep saying it because it's going to happen. Ohio State, national champions.
Well, we'll see if you're right. I mean, there's a long way to go till that happens. This is just week one, but the Buckeyes have Rutgers at home, their Big Ten opener next week. Rutgers probably doesn't seem to pose much of a challenge for the Buckeyes next Saturday, but, you know, it's college football, and you never know what can happen and who came to play and who doesn't come to play, and that all matters. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens if Haskins can keep it up. They keep running the ball with Mike Weber and see if Ryan Day can go to 2-0 in his interim three-game stint here with the Buckeyes. Moving on, it's opening week. It's the big week. Steelers, Browns at First Energy Stadium. I cannot wait till Sunday.
Oh, you know what? I'm so excited for Sunday. I haven't been this excited for a Browns game and probably since I first started following the team, because, you know, there's actual excitement surrounding this team. There's a couple questions coming into this week about the offensive line, but it doesn't deter my excitement. I'm a little interested to see if Josh Gordon's going to play. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think he's going to play. He hasn't participated in a game since last year, participated in no preseason, but he's been with the team now 2 to 3 weeks. Had a little hamstring issue earlier, but I think he's going to play. I think he'll probably play probably not a full game, but probably 25 to 45% of the snaps that he would normally play. So I think he'll be right there. They'll target him a bunch. He'll be a comfort zone for – he'll be the deep threat Tyrod Taylor needs to open up the Steelers' defense and get that offense rolling.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I think Joe Hayden is going to have his hands full because he's going to have, you know, Jarvis Landry and Josh Gordon running all over the field. The improvement of Rashard Higgins, hopefully that wasn't just a fluke in training camp and the preseason. And then another thing is, too, is before this game came up, I was giving the Browns probably about a 30, 40% chance of winning because, you know, it is still the Steelers, and let's be honest, the Steelers have owned us over the years. As much as it pains me to say it. But recently, I don't know if you noticed, but Le'Veon Bell has not signed his franchise tender yet. So there's a good chance that he's probably not going to be in this game. And that's a huge factor, which I think bumps our chances between 45 and 55% chance of winning this game with the Steelers not. I mean, they'll still have Big Ben and they'll still have AB and Juju Smith-Schuster, but they won't have the security of Le'Veon Bell. And I think with the way our defense played against Philly, that's going to make that offense. It's going to make it tougher for that offense to move the ball against us.
Yeah, that's a huge blow for the Steelers if Bell does not play for the Browns. And the Browns are much, much improved. In my opinion, the Browns are the second best team in this division. I think they've moved ahead with just offseason moves, draft moves, things that I've seen in the preseason. I think they moved ahead of both Baltimore, who's really on a decline, and also Cincinnati, who's basically wallowing around a 500 team. But so I think the Browns have moved to second. They're going to challenge the Steelers here. And, I mean, we've lost six games in a row to the Steelers. A couple of them been close, but nothing really much to shout about. So it'll be interesting this coming year, this coming week with – like you said, Landry, Hayden. I mean, Hayden couldn't guard anybody in Cleveland, and then the Steelers took him. So he'll have his hands full with Landry. I think we'll be able to run the ball on the Steelers. Our offensive line will be, you know, there's been some questions or whatnot, but I think they'll be back in form on Sunday. And you know, Todd Haley's got it in for the Steelers. He was there for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. You know, he led that offense. You know, he's got it in for the Steelers, and he really, really wants to get this one on Sunday.
Well, and you know, word is, him and Ben did not get along, so I think he's really going to want to stick it to him, and I really hope that we do, and I believe that we can. Carlos Hyde looked great in preseason. I think he's definitely the number one back. I think we need to mix in Duke a little bit more, but whenever Duke touches the ball, anything can happen, and I think that now that the regular season is getting ready to start, you're going to see more of him. Nick Chubb can come in and spell Carlos Hyde and still give us the same impact that Hyde potentially gives us. My one question is, who starts at left tackle with the offensive line? Word is, a lot of the rumors I'm hearing right now is undrafted free agent Desmond Harrison is looking like he's going to get the start. And, you know, that makes me a little bit concerned, but apparently he's highly talented. But I really feel like that we can come out 1-0 after this game. With the improvements that you stated earlier, we're still the youngest roster in the NFL, even with all the veterans that we added and all the improvements that we made, which is, that speaks to what John Dorsey has done to put his stamp on this team.
Yeah, keeping this young team and adding some veteran leadership. And, I mean, they had veteran leadership. They had Tyrod Taylor, who is – I mean, he's not 30 years old yet. So, that's your veteran leadership, and that's going to be – you know, and so that keeps us young, keeps us, you know, energetic. You know, this crowd, the city is going to be fired up come Sunday at the home opener. There's never been – as you stated before, there's never been this type of atmosphere around the Browns as far as realistic optimism for the team that there is going into this year with the addition of, you know, Baker Mayfield, who's not even going to play, hopefully. in the first game. You know, everybody loves him. Everybody loves Njoku. Jarvis Landry's just taking over that receiver room. Njoku looks like he's stepped up. Carl, like you said, our three-headed monster at running back, Hyde, Chubb, and Duke Johnson is probably as good as anybody in the league. And then Tyrod Taylor, the veteran, he doesn't turn the ball over, which is what we did last year. Probably cost us 4 or 5 wins. But if he comes in, doesn't turn the ball over, our defense with the addition of the number four overall pick, Denzel Ward, picked up the free safety, Demaryius Randall, and then added some guys to that front, which is already the number one rush defense in the league. If we can get the secondary to play a little better, Myles Garrett will be a terror off the edge. The hype and the excitement around town for the Steelers game this Sunday is off the charts.
And deservedly so. And like you're saying, there's some young guys that have made some leaps. You highlighted David Njoku. I think he's made the biggest leap from year one to year two, and I think he's going to be an absolute weapon and a force to be reckoned with. And barring injury, Tyrod Taylor will be the starting quarterback. And let's just hope for Baker's sake for right now that Tyrod's in there for a good bit, because I think Baker needs to sit, and I think he needs to learn more behind Tyrod. Yeah, he looked great in the preseason, but a lot of the times he's playing with the twos. I think he needs more time to develop his game. I think Tyrod is the exact guy to follow behind and watch, because, like you said, he does not turn over the ball. He is a proven leader on the field, and he wins ball games. And he puts his team in position to win ball games, which is something that often you saw the Browns not do last year. They did not put themselves in the opportunities to win ball games. A lot of times, like you said, they turned over the ball a lot, and Tyrod doesn't do that. So I think that helps a lot. Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett is he's going to be a Pro Bowler this year. The way he looked in the preseason, and I get it. This is preseason we're talking about, and I'm the first one to say this is just preseason. But Myles Garrett looks like he's switched another gear, and that having Greg Williams in for a second year is just another positive for him. And then you have Emmanuel Ogba on the other side of him. Don't sleep on him. That's another guy that you could see really blossom this year on the opposite of Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I think I agree totally with those points. And I think one of the strongest units of the defense is that linebacking unit with Christian Kirksey, Jamie Collins, who came over from the Patriots a couple years ago, and then also Joe Schobert, who was a Pro Bowler last year. That's the strongest unit on the team. And, you know, the defense was number one against the run last year. Let's not forget about that. And then they drafted Denzel Ward, and they got picked up Terrence Mitchell, and they had Demaryius Randall. And they had Peppers playing well. They had Derek Kennard playing well. Booty Calhoun is going to be in there. So, I mean, they can play a little better in that secondary, which hurt them last year. They're going to be a top 10 defense this year. And with that offense vastly improved, I can see them challenging, you know, for the Steelers for the AFC North title a little bit this year.
Yeah, I could see that too, but more than likely, I see them at the most right now at this point as a wild card team. I still think the Steelers are going to win the division just because it is the Steelers. They have more experienced players at this point. But on your point on the linebackers, I completely agree with you. That is the most talented group on that side of the ball. Like you said, Joe Schobert, who was a Pro Bowler last year, is a perfect fit at middle linebacker. Christian Kirksey, who has been a tackling machine and has been great for us since we drafted him in the third round out of Iowa at weak side, is great. And then Jamie Collins, who looked healthy in the preseason and looks like we're going to see the Jamie Collins that we saw in New England. With regards to the secondary, I think the secondary is definitely going to be much improved. I mean, it's hard to not improve from last year, from that secondary that we put out last year. That secondary was just god awful. Denzel Ward looks like a slam dunk. Opposite him, we have Terrence Mitchell, who's been, as we've seen on Hard Knocks, has been all up in Jarvis Landry's face. And I love that competitiveness in the guy. Demaryius Randle, who is enabling a guy like Jabril Peppers to play more of a natural, strong safety position down in the box type of guy. I think Demaryius Randle is probably going to be the steal of this offseason. I could see a potential Pro Bowl season out of him as he's picking off passes left and right. And then another, Breann Body Calhoun, he's backing Randle up at the safety, but he's also playing the slot corner. And he just absolutely plays hard. And I see so much improvement from him already. And I'm excited to watch him. Another guy that we signed was TJ Carey. Right now he's a number two quarterback, but he did get like a 4-year, $30 million deal. As far as I know, he looks pretty decent in camp. So it looks like we got a pretty decent bunch there in the secondary.
Yeah, and one thing I think is overlooked a lot by the media, and you know, is the Jarvis Landry. Not only was he a signing as far as a great receiver that we're gonna target and use him a lot, but his competitive nature, his swagger, if you will, his attitude is infecting this whole team. You know, everybody saw the rant he went on in Hard Knocks there the first week. But if you go to practice, I went to practice a couple years ago when, Hugh was a coach, and it was pro practice. Everybody went through the motions. It was what it was. Now with Landry there, guys are competing. Guys are going after each other. They're competing for spots. I think Todd Haley, Greg Williams being there adds that fuel. Guys are competing. They're going after each other. There's no easy catches. We're not walking through stuff, when it's live practice time. We're not letting guys catch the ball. They're getting upset at each other. It's a great atmosphere, even at practice. And I believe the signing of Landry, Greg Williams is the defensive coordinator, Haley is the offensive coordinator, both proven winners, proven guys who have got proven outstanding units going at each other, is leading this team, making it way more competitive, and even practices better. And I think that's going to translate over. And you saw it translate to the preseason games. I think it's going to translate over to the regular season also.
Oh, I completely agree. Like you were saying with Jarvis Landry, he and Greg Williams and Todd Haley, their additions have upped the ante, and it's something that Cleveland hasn't had in a while, because let's be honest, we didn't compete in practices. I mean, I didn't even go to the practices, but you could see the way that they played on the field, that there was no competition, and people were taking days off. And that's not the case with a guy like Jarvis there, who went on a rant, like you said, went on that rant, that's now famous rant that they were playing in the rookie show during on Hard Knocks, which is pretty hilarious. It's completely changed the culture. And I think that was John Dorsey's plan when he came in. He wanted to change the culture, and he's added players that are changing the culture of this team. And, fans should look forward to that, because when the culture finally changes, that means the team is actually going to start going in the right direction. And I think there's real we've been optimistic before, but I think we really truthfully can be optimistic now, because this team is worn and ready to go.
Yeah, I think the optimism before, like you were saying, was more of, well, we can't stink every year optimism. You know what I mean? That type of optimism rather than this year.
Exactly.
This year, I think it's realistic optimism where, hey, we can win some freaking games because we finally have players. We got guys. And another thing, we got guys like Landry who have been to the playoffs. Jamie Collins, who's been to the Super Bowl with the Patriots. We got Haley, who's been to the Super Bowl with the Steelers and the Cardinals. We have Greg Williams, who's been around a long time, been to the playoffs, been to the Super Bowl. Guys like that, proven guys, winners, are finally on our team, and they're showing the other guys, this is what it takes to be a good team. This is what you have to put into it to be a great great player in this league to be a professional, and I think it's going to pay huge dividends even this year and going forward. And I believe that's one reason John Dorsey kept, because there's a lot of questions how Hugh Jackson, after going 1-31, was able to keep his job. And I think that was one thing Dorsey had in mind. He was going to let Hugh Jackson, there's going to be Dorsey, then there's going to be Hugh Jackson, the CEO of the team, and you're going to bring in, and Greg Williams is already there, then now you're going to bring in Todd Haley to run the offense, and you have two alphas in the room that are running those different units and to make them better, and Hugh can just coach the team and doesn't have to worry about the offense. He can worry about the entire team.
Yeah, definitely, I agree. That's a big reason why Hugh got kept. Now, Hugh's going to get – I think Hugh is still skating on thin ice, though, because he's going to – Hugh has to win some games. With these additions, I think this says – all right, I've given – John Dorsey says, all right, I've given you the keys. Now you need to take this car and you need to drive it. So I feel like he's given him the pieces. Now we really got to see how well Hugh Jackson can coach. And I honestly think with these additions, like you said, with two alpha males running their units respectively – We've already witnessed this, already made things so much easier on Hugh, and hopefully it translates to more success. And I strongly believe that it will.
Me too, and I can't wait for this fall and this Sunday, especially the Browns Steelers at First Energy Stadium, kicking off the season. The city's going to be electric. The stadium's going to be electric. But let's not forget our other Cleveland team that's pushing to the playoffs, pushing for that World Series title. The Cleveland Indians, they're 4-6 in their last 10 games, but they're starting to get things turned around. They just signed Josh Donaldson, who was MVP a couple years ago. He's still a little banged up, and he went to Triple A today, hit a grand slam. What do you think about the addition of Josh Donaldson?
Oh, my God, my mouth dropped when I saw that. I was really excited about that move. Now, granted, Jason Kipnis was starting to hit, but who's to know if that was going to continue? I think what this move, adding Josh Donaldson, says is we want to win the World Series, and we want to win it right now. Because, like you said, he is a former MVP, and yes, he has been hurt this year. But I've been even before he was traded, I've been following his progress in rehab, and he's looked a lot like the old Josh Donaldson. And if that's the Josh Donaldson that we get, the sky is the limit for this team, and the Indians are going to be a team to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and I mean, you put him in a lineup with Frankie leading off, who, by the way, hit his 30th home run today. He's got 30 home runs, 40-plus doubles, and 20-plus stolen bases. He's the first Indian ever to do that, to achieve that mark. And him and Jose were both with 30 home runs and 20 stolen bases as teammates, were the first teammates to do that for the Indians. So, I mean, you're putting him in a lot of that type of lineup with Frankie, Jose, Brantley, Edwin, Yonder, Yandy Diaz. He keeps getting some play here. And then you throw in Josh Donaldson. That just gives you another bat in that lineup where you can drive in runs.
Yeah, and you know, you're talking about Eddie's getting hot. Eddie, since he came off the DL, has been absolutely on fire. He's the Eddie that we signed. And I was never worried about Eddie during the season because he always ends up getting his numbers. And like you said, Frankie and Jose have put up absolutely superstar numbers with 30-plus home runs, 20-plus stolen bases, and Frankie with the 40-plus doubles, the first in franchise history to do that. Another thing too is we've gotten really a lot better play at center field. Like Greg Allen has really come on, and like I mentioned how Kipnis has been getting hot lately. With this Josh Donaldson move, this is how it's gonna go. Josh Donaldson's gonna play third, Jose's gonna switch over to second base, and that's gonna be it right there. Where that puts Kipnis in the outfield again. So hopefully, maybe he can continue his hitting the way he has recently, and producing in the outfield for us, along with a young kid like Greg Allen.
Yeah, I think his veteran bat's going to be huge in the playoffs. And moving him to right field, he's a good outfielder. You know, even when he was younger, he was a better outfielder than he was infielder. But now he's been playing second base for a long time. And, yeah, I mean, they had no problem moving him to center field last year in the playoffs. So they moved him to right field. And then his veteran bat in the lineup, I just think it's key at the bottom of the lineup to have a veteran bat like that who can handle the bat, who can move runners when needed, who can drive the ball a little bit. He's been hitting with a lot more power lately. And then also able to handle the bat where he can lay down a bunt, can, you know, hit to certain sides, driving hit fly balls, sack flies, and drive in runs, just be able to move runners around so we can get it back to Frankie and Brantley and Jose and Edwin and have them drive in runs and runs and runs.
Yeah, and you know what? You said he's been hitting with a lot more power. I also think he's been hitting with a lot more focus lately. He's just looked that – he just looks locked in when he goes to the plate. You were saying about right field. I think the plan right now is center field for him when Josh Donaldson does get healthy. I kind of like that idea because I like Melky Cabrera still over there in right field, who's been a godsend for us. And I think it just adds a whole nother wrinkle to this offense that we haven't had. I mean, let's just be honest. We didn't have the Josh Donaldson type bat the last couple of years when we made our run. And I think that's a huge difference maker. And it speaks to this front office. This front office is always willing to make winning moves that puts the team in position to win. Now they're trying to extend this window. They want to get this city a championship, and I truly believe that it can happen, and it will happen.
Well, just think about this. Right now, our lineup today, we had Frankie leading off, Brantley, Jose, Edwin, Yonder, Melky Cabrera. You throw Josh Donaldson at 7, you know, with Kipnis at 8 and Yan Gomes at 9 maybe. I mean, that's a solid. That lineup right there, I'd put it up against the mid-90s Indians lineup, you know, when they were scoring, you know, 10, 12 runs a game. You know, that's a pretty stout lineup. And then to go with our pitching with Kluber, who won 3-0 on the other night against the Rays. You know, Carrasco struggled a little bit yesterday, but he's got 16 wins. Trevor Bauer comes back. That's a lineup there in a starting pitching rotation with a much improved bullpen that is a recipe to win the entire thing.
Yeah, and you mentioned the starting rotation. Corey Kluber has been the Corey Kluber that we're used to seeing. The start by Carrasco, yeah, he did struggle a little bit, but that seemed to happen. I don't know if you noticed, but that's happened just only a couple times here in the second half recently. For the most part, he's been lights out. So I don't foresee that as that big of a problem. Getting Trevor Bauer back healthy is big for us. But another guy I don't think people are paying attention to, Mike Clevinger. Mike Clevinger has looked great in his last few starts. I mean, last start, I believe he had 10 Ks. And he's looking like the Mike Clevinger that we saw very early in the season before he tailed off. And then he looks like he's getting his stuff back. And he looks to be an X factor. My question is what are they going to do with Shane Bieber? You know, I'm hoping that they kind of leave him in the rotation, but we could also see him. I wouldn't mind switching him to the bullpen, being that he is a young guy. And then often that's worked before, because then they don't have to rely on all of their pitches. They can rely on their fastball and one other pitch. And from what I can tell, he's got a nasty curveball. And a hard fastball, and he can focus more on throwing harder with that fastball too if he's put in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think that's where ultimately where Bieber will help us in the playoffs is the bullpen, to be that long reliever, give us 2-3 innings to get to Brad Hand and Cody Allen and Andrew Miller when Andrew Miller comes back. But the Tribe seems set up for a World Series run. I'll tell you what though, the run through the American League playoffs is not going to be easy with you got the Red Sox, the Astros, the Yankees, and whoever wins the other wild card is going to be a tough task for anyone to come out of there. But I think we're all in agreement that whoever comes out of the American League is going to have the upper hand over the National League as far as World Series favorite.
Yeah, that run in the American League right now, that's running the gauntlet right there. You have four potent lineups right now. And like you were saying, how you would put a lineup with Josh Donaldson against the Indians in the 90s, I would go as far as to put that lineup up against the current Red Sox lineup that's been bashing the ball all around the place. I would even put it up against – I would put this lineup against any lineup right now. With a top level Josh Donaldson, but like you said, it's going to be a gauntlet. It's going to be well earned if we can come out of the American League. I believe that we have the necessary tools to come, and it's going to be an exciting October for Cleveland fans.
For sure, it's going to be the Indians making their push towards the World Series. Browns open up Sunday with the Steelers again at First Energy Stadium at 1 o'clock. Buckeyes have their second game. Sports are back in Cleveland. It was a long summer of nothing but the Indians, which they kept us in the sports for the whole summer because they're top of their division, running away with the division.
They kept us sane.
Yes, they kept it. Good, that's a good word. They did keep us sane. But you know, now all three of them are back. It's just going to be – it's exciting times. Realistic optimism for the Browns. Realistic optimism for the Buckeyes and the Indians running away with their division into the playoffs and hopefully to a World Series. That does it for this week's episode of Any Problems in Sports, Anyone podcast brought to you by OhioSportsBlog.com. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at @idiotproblemsSAO. Also, Any Problems in Sports, Anyone brought to you by BuyACaseCrew.com. Buy you the best sports-related iPhone cases for your iPhone from buycasecrew.com. But remember, when you're buying them, use the code OSB for 10% off all these awesome cases that are already at a great low price. But get that extra 10% off by using the code OSB for 10% off at checkout. Join us on Thursday for a preview of the Buckeye Scarlet Knights game coming to you Saturday from the Shoe in Columbus. Also, we will be previewing more in-depth the Browns-Steelers game from First Energy Stadium on Sunday to open the regular season for the NFL. We'll also be previewing any other college games coming this weekend from the state of Ohio, like the MAC Conference. But until Thursday, we'll see you then.